Hi, guys. Just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, everybody. What's up, guys? Welcome to my podcast. This is Nicole, and you have reached the cure for chronic pain with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome. Glad you are here. Hope your holiday season is chill. You are hanging in there. It's certainly a weird time. Tiff and I were just talking this morning how we cannot believe, I think it's been, 9 months since our kids have properly gone to school. It's just so insane how you can never plan for anything. It's like really a lesson for life. Just, you can't plan for anything. So just roll with it. But anyway, here we are. So I hope this finds you well. Today I have an amazing interview with Caroline Dewey, otherwise known on my JournalSpeak page as the practitioner that runs JournalSpeak Integrative Specialists. She is trained by me. She's a master's level social worker, and she is also certified in EMDR. She's also an ordained minister. She has done lots of things in her short and vibrant, and I say short just because she's so young, so accomplished for being so young. I never remember exactly how old she is, but I think she's either 30 or in her early 30s, Caroline, sorry. The reason I don't know how old she is because she's such an old soul that even though I'm 48, I see her tremendously as a peer. Caroline and I met at the Kripalu Institute. I think it's Institute Center, Kripalu. We met at Kripalu, which is similar to the Omega Institute. It's a retreat center that runs a lot of incredible programs for mind, body, spirit kind of healing, creative healing as well. And we were there not as practitioners. We were there as participants in a somatic, it was called SomaSoul, I think. It was a somatic experiencing kind of retreat. And when we met, I was there, it was probably about 7 years ago now, and I was in a very, very dark place. As dark as I have gotten since my chronic pain started in terms of, you know, my journey to figure myself out and get out of chronic pain, as dark as I've ever been. I was drinking alcoholically. I was not healthy in my mind, body, or my spirit, and I was seeking something. I don't think I even knew really what I was just wanting to be helped and saved and helped. I was really, really low. And I went to this retreat, and it wasn't that I hated it. It was that I was suffering so immensely. First of all, I went cold turkey off of any substances for the week. So I was like in odd withdrawals. I didn't take the kind of drugs that would lead you into, you know, those kind of withdrawals where you would need to be in detox. I wasn't that kind of an addict, but I was a daily user of substances to not feel my feelings. And so going off of everything, going to this strange place, it was cold. It was Albany. I think I had to fly to Albany to get there. And I just was in a very low place and I got sick. So surprise, surprise, you guys TMSers, I got so sick physically. I got a fever and a sinus infection, and then I'm also withdrawing from alcohol and whatever pills, and I was just in a bad place. And Caroline was just another participant, and through a long story that is too weird and too interesting and just too long and involved to tell right now, she noticed me and spiritually knew what I needed, and connected with me and said, "Hey, I see you." And it was so profound in my life. And we have been so connected ever since. I think I don't overstep by saying that as a result of knowing me, she went back to school and got her master's in social work. And then through her practice on her own and building her own resume and business, we came back together and she decided to do this work and to guide people through this work under the umbrella of my theories. And it has been so magical. She is an instructor that comes to Omega with me. She is an instructor that teaches at all my virtual retreats. If you're thinking to the coming to the one in of coming to the one in May. And she runs Journal Speak Integrative Specialists, where she is a practitioner working one-on-one with people, guiding them through this work, among other things. She's incredible. So anyway, I can't wait to share that interview with you. And there's so much useful information in here about embodying your trauma, about allowing it to move. I just really think you'll get a lot out of it. So briefly, before I open us to the interview, just my anxiety course launched this weekend. It was amazing. It went incredibly well. I'm already hearing back from so many of you about how impactful the exercises are. If you're a person that suffers with anxiety in any way, please take advantage of this course. You just have to go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, and you can click on the courses tab, or there's a link right from the homepage to take part in this course. It's a virtual course, by the way, so you don't have to show up at any time. It's self-guided, and I'm really proud of it. All right, so let's get to the interview. I'm so excited to share it with you. I hope this podcast finds you well. I hope if it doesn't find you well, you get a little comfort and joy out of spending some time with Caroline and I today. Sorry, that was incorrect English. With Caroline and me today. Thanks, Dad. All right. Love you guys. I'll talk to you next week. Okay. Bye-bye. Hello, everybody. Welcome to my interview with Caroline Dewey. And Caroline Dewey, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
It is beyond my pleasure. So in the intro, which I haven't yet recorded, but I know I will, I know I shared a little bit about our personal relationship. So I will just say, because I'm going to say it in front of you, that Caroline, if there is anyone that I consider my right-hand man in this work, it is you. You have been with me through a big awakening journey for myself in coming into my power and understanding that I have the ability and the strength and the bravery to do what I'm doing by carrying this message. And I incredibly value the energy and the expertise and the content that you bring in this. So I'm just really excited for us to riff, you know, just for you guys out there. Caroline and I don't have like a major plan for this conversation, but we always have so much to say that is helpful because we help each other and then we help people. And so Caroline, I'm just going to kind of throw it to you for you to start telling me kind of how you feel about your kind of coming into this work, what you bring as a Journal Speak Integrative Specialist, which I will have mentioned in the intro that I'm yet to record. And I don't know, take it from wherever and we'll figure out where we go.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. So I think that one of my favorite things about doing this work is the way that I came to be here. So, you know, in my story, I was dealing with a lot of chronic stomach aches and anxiety, depression. I'll just put the big bubble of mental illness around my adolescent years. And I saw many therapists through those years and into my early 20s. And they always would ask me when I first met them, you know, how did you survive all of this? What was it that kept you, you know, alive and moving in the right direction through all that you've been through? And my number one answer was always journaling. Mm. And, you know, when I met you, so when I read your book, I kind of had an awakening myself and realizing really how valuable that journaling was and how different the style of journaling I had been doing was to what most people think of with journaling. Because it was very much just an outpouring of like the most raw molten center of my being mm-hmm. in my experience. And so when I read your book the first time, it was like, oh man, I've been journal speaking all this time. And so I knew, you know, immediately that it had saved my life in many ways, and that it certainly would save many others. So going from there into, you know, I was in, I had just finished undergrad at that time and was going into grad school. And so being able to apply that model to the work I was doing with everybody from there on out, it's just so powerful. It's such an extremely, you know, healing process to be able to like introduce people to that most, you know, molten raw core of their being yeah. in that way, which is really incredible.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when tell, yeah, I don't want to, I like, I kind of just want to hear what you have to say. So sorry, I won't interrupt you. Go.
No, it's okay. I mean, you know, it's such a long story, you know, so I don't want to like just ramble on forever, but yeah, it's so cool. And so, you know, so for me, it was a lot of years of trying to kind of like mix it in with, the therapeutic model. You know, I was in grad school for social work and learning to be and practicing as a psychotherapist. And I had a lot of success with that, but I just kind of found over the years that like, doing therapy is kind of separate. It's kind of different. And that this work is really something we do for ourselves. You know, it's like this, the thing I love most to tell people is that everybody in the TMS model, I mean, TMS community tends towards this like perfectionist or mm-hmm. overachiever or all those things. And in our lives, those of us who relate to that, we've come to a point usually where we realize it's actually been making us sick.
Yes.
And that's such a sad thing, you know, to see and to feel when you realize like the thing that you thought was like the best thing about you in a way is the thing that's like made you most sick. And so what I love, love, love to tell people is that now that you're here, now that you know about journal speak and about this work, you get to transform that same energy into this most intense devotion to yourself and this most intense like outpouring of love for yourself, to get to know yourself and dig deep and don't give up and stay persistent, you know? And I just think that's so special that we get to take that mess and turn it back into something really powerful and valuable for our own selves, first and foremost. And so, you know, sharing this work with people is the greatest honor for me, because I truly feel like it's a blessing for me to be able to witness people through this process. You know, it is work that we have to do for ourselves, and at times that can be pretty lonely. You know, we can have support, and support is extremely important, obviously. But ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, it's like it's us and our journal speak. And so being able to serve as a witness to that and as a mediator to that sort of conversation that goes on is really powerful. And, you know, I always say that this work is about reestablishing, re-nourishing, re-nurturing this relationship between you and you. And so for me, you know, I come in as sort of like a mediator, and, you know, it's like in the couple's counseling of your own internal being, you know, I get to kind of play the middle ground there and translate or just help you learn to communicate with yourself or understand the signals and the symbols and the messages that your body is sending. And your subconscious being is sending forth, because once you can understand that language, you're golden, you know, you can communicate with yourself, and you don't have to, you know, your body doesn't have to resort to intense symptom and pain and sensation in order to get your attention. You just learn totally how to listen.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this is what's fascinating to me about life. And one reason that I think my message does land with people, because I am a constant student of this. I use myself as a constant science experiment. That's why I call my IGTV series, I Am Evidence, because I'm always evidence. I'm evidence of how I'm fucking it up. And I'm evidence of how I'm a resounding success in the fact that the chronic diagnosis that I got when I was 19 doesn't limit my life at all. And so, you know, I'm always a student of this. So what I want you to explain kind of to me, because I don't think you and I, you know, it's funny when you know someone so well, you don't take the time to have these sort of granular conversations with them. But it's always fascinating to me when I sit down with people that I really do know to hear the way their mind works. Because one thing you said that you think that therapy is kind of separate of this is an interesting evolution that I've also come to, because I'm trained classically as a therapist. Caroline and I have the same graduate degree, which is that we're licensed master's level social workers. And then I went on to get clinical licensure and to work as a psychotherapist for many years. But one of the things I found, and one of the reasons why I no longer sit in private practice for the purpose of doing this work, is that you're right. The pace of weekly therapy, which is amazing and important and so dramatically has helped me in my own life, is a little different in what we are sort of coaching people through when helping them to do this work. So how did that kind of take shape for you when you realized kind of what you want to do? So tell me, remind me of the exact title that you call yourself now. Aside from that, you are a journal speak integrative specialist and trained by me in doing my work. You said it to me before and then I forgot it.
Yeah. So I call myself a transformational coach and healer.
Yes. Yes. So explain that to me. Explain to me what that is versus what maybe like a therapist is and what you think people really need when they're doing this work and why it's different.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So I think, you know, yeah, it came very sort of organically for me to realize that when I was working in mental health and doing therapy with people, I started understanding more about the type of people or the stage of development that I wanted to be working with. And that was people who are, you know, really dedicated and to some extent desperate to change. And therefore ready, you know, to do the work, right, and to just get moving. And I found at that point that I was explaining to a lot of people, you know, there are some therapists who are really, they're really good at helping you, like, just be where you are and like move through your process at this moment and not be constantly trying to push yourself to change or be where you're not ready to be. And so there is a time and place and there's room for all of that. But that just, I learned that it wasn't what I was meant to do, you know, that I was really meant to work with the people who wanted to see transformation happening. And that was so evident in, you know, the way that I used the journal speak model in my work all those years with people. You know, I always introduced it to my clients, no matter what they were dealing with. And it was always helpful. And it was always helpful in like moving things, you know. And I also trained in EMDR, which is, you know, really effective with PTSD and all kinds of things. But the fact that it's effective with PTSD is what makes it so loud and proud. And it's about trauma work, you know, and it's about making things move. So, you know, getting those shifts is what I think journal speak is all about, is that we're getting deep into that center and we're shifting things around. And so, you know, the only real downside that I would say about therapy is that sometimes, because it's, you know, connected in with the Western medical model, is there's this tendency to give you slap a diagnosis on you and give you the impression that that's a forever statement. And it's a, you know, bit of a life sentence for some things. And, you know, and that's what kind of like, always rubbed me the wrong way, because I believe that no matter what the diagnosis is or whatever that we've been handed, we still always have room, you know, within ourselves and within our experience to grow and move things at our own readiness. And so that was a big learning piece for me of just understanding where I fit into the sort of therapeutic model and where I kind of stepped outside of it. And so I did train, like I said, in things like EMDR, trauma work, and I also started long before that, even when I was in undergrad, I started working with energy medicine and spiritual healing and all that fantastic stuff that we're basically, you know, not allowed to talk about in traditional therapy settings. That was always strange for me, that it was kind of like, don't talk about religion unless you're a spiritual counselor, you know, in a religious institution, and spirituality was just like a non-existent term. You know, it was like religion religion.
In all fairness though, religion has nothing to do, and for me, okay, I'll speak for myself because I never want to offend anyone. For me, religion has nothing to do with spirituality. Religion right. is to me a cultural phenomenon that is great if you are partaking in your religion. But I know for a fact, because I know the work you do, that your work has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with connecting with one's own highest energy. Would that be yes. correct?
Yeah, absolutely. But, and that's exactly the problem, that because in our education system and, you know, in the therapeutic model, they don't make that distinction. So right. the only statement was, be very careful about talking about religion. And then like the conversation ended. There was no talk of spirituality at all. And so that was like a part of my I had to go outside of my degrees to get education in how to help people heal their spiritual being. And absolutely that, you know, obviously for some people it is tied in with their religion, but for many, many, many others, more and more yeah. all the time, it has nothing to do with religion. And in fact, some people are, because they've had religious woundings in their life, or they've witnessed religious woundings for others, they don't even know that they have spiritual being. And, you know, that's something I also.
That's true. That was true for me. Yeah. Which is why I had I didn't think that, because religion wasn't something I was brought up with, I thought spirituality wasn't for me. And right. it was really made me feel very alone before mm-hmm. I realized that spirituality can be for anyone, because it's really about connecting deeply, deeply with oneself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love talking about that and helping people to see that, like, you know, your spirituality can be like a hike in nature. You know, it's like, it's wherever you become most present. And, you know, and so for some people, yeah, like a church can do that, or a temple can do that. But for others of us, it's like, you know, the going and doing some kind of volunteer work, like that can be your church, or doing some painting, you know, whatever it is, it's whatever that brings you most centered into yourself, for sure, first and foremost.
Yes.
And then there's a lot of expanding to be done on that as well.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, and so, yeah, so that was huge for me too, just like incorporating spiritual healing, energetic healing, and understanding how deeply affected we are by our environment and the people around us in an energetic sense. You know, we're constantly picking up stimulation all the time. And, you know, another thing that I find really common in the TMS community is people who would, kind of consider themselves as like an empath or a highly sensitive person. And, you know, that's an energetic thing. We become really deeply affected by our environment or the people around us, or we've suppressed our emotions so much that we're like, we can only feel other people's stuff. You know, it's like, there's so much there for sure. But so learning about all of those things, the kind of extraneous variables to the therapeutic model, was so powerful for me. And just realizing that, of course, therapy, you know, has its place. I still, you know, I swear by it for myself and anyone that I would meet, you know, in the street, like they ask me, should I do therapy? Yes, I don't even need to do anything more in conversation with you. Yes. But I just also am so excited that there are so many other, types of treatment out there or services that you can get and support that you can get. And so, doing the work that I do, I love that I've trained in so many different modalities so that I can just give each person what they need. And, because we're all so unique, you know, we all have different needs at different times.
Yes. And that actually makes me think that I want to talk about what you bring to the retreats. So let me back up a second and say that. So when I am often saying, oh, come to Omega or come to, you know, 1440 when I was going to have that, you know, and obviously COVID has changed the landscape of live retreats. So I moved it online. So I always say, come to my virtual retreats. Caroline is one of my instructors that has been with me from the beginning, would have been one of your instructors at Omega or 1440, and is one of the instructors that I bring to all of my virtual offerings. And so the reason why Caroline's kind of unique is because the lessons that she brings to the retreat is a little bit more, I want to say, involved with embodiment, involved with maybe pushing our comfort zones a little bit, because her work is not straight up traditionally therapeutic. It brings in all these modalities. And actually, the way Caroline and I met is we were attending a retreat, not for professional reasons, but for ourselves and for our own personal growth, that was around somatic experiencing. So one of the things I think is really funny, Caroline, about your work when you come to the retreats is you know that you need to begin the conversation with telling people this is going to creep you out and make you cringe. Like you go there, like you don't even give people the opportunity to give you the side eye. You're like, I'm about to tell you stuff that's a little bit awkward, but I promise you, just try it and see what happens. And I want to say to you all out there, consistently, when I get feedback about my retreats, Caroline's course, in terms of what she brings, is the highest rated. Because I think when people are invited to go outside of their comfort zones and they do what's hard anyway, it's amazing what they can get from those experiences, from glean from that. So why don't you talk a little bit about what you do bring? Because I think it really helps people to not only hear about it, but even if you, a person listening to this podcast, are never going to come to one of these retreats, which because there's so much to be gained just for free that I put out there to do this work, I think you can benefit from just knowing how impactful this work is. Do you agree with that, Caroline?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I feel like, you know, like I kind of mentioned before that the way I look at this is always about rebuilding this relationship with ourself and our own inner being and getting into that like molten core of our being. And we do so much work around inner child, you know, and getting connected in that way. And I mentioned that, you know, our body and our system speaks to us in like its own language. And so it's kind of a symbolic language, right? It's a language of sensation and symbol and symptom is usually what it comes to. But if you can learn to interpret that language and hear it, see it, feel it before it gets to the point of symptom, then you kind of bypass all of that. And so the work that I do at the retreats is a form of somatic healing. And what that means is that we're getting into the body, you know, we're getting into that symbolic communication that happens between our subconscious mind, our body, our inner child, and our conscious mind. And I think the reason that it has such a huge impact on people is because, like you said, you have to go past your comfort zone in order to do it. And when you do that, it's one of the most grand gestures that we can make towards that inner being or that inner child. It's like, I'm using the example with my clients of imagining that, like, when you get started in this work, while you're doing this work, it's kind of like you're dealing with a foster child or an adopted child, that they're coming from some backstory, you know, and we have to be patient with that. We have to be willing to learn what the backstory is and learn how to really connect, because it's about building trust, right? And so if you have a new foster child or adopted child in your home, just because you say, I love you, or just because you know, are willing to look them in the eye in that first day, they're not necessarily ready to hear that.
Right.
And so when we do the journal speak and we do the inner child work and we show up, you know, every day or as often as possible to do these things, that's a massive gesture. But when you go in and you do this type of somatic healing work, it's like getting on the floor with a child. You know, when they're playing and they want to show you something, when you get on the floor with them, that's so different than towering over and being like, oh yeah, good job. You know, like you get down there and start coloring with them or playing imaginary games with them. It's just huge. So, and that's what it is. It really is a lot of coloring and sort of imaginary games in a sense, because we go inside and we look at different areas of our physical body to find emotions or memories or physical sensations, and then we bring them out. So we draw them on paper, or
because I'm listening to you and I'm trying, first of all, move closer to the mic. You kind of sound like you fell away. Oh, something happened okay. While you were talking. You're okay. I forgive you. One thing I want to do for people, because I just find it fascinating, when I teach retreats and my instructors are teaching, I just do the lesson. I become a student and I do the lesson. Will you explain, just like so we can really get like in detail, explain to me, obviously we're not going to teach the whole lesson on a podcast, but explain to me what you do, what you say to people that we're going to do, and then what they do, because I just think it's fascinating.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we can just do like a mini.
Yeah, we'll do a mini.
A mini dip. Awesome. Okay, so yeah, this is definitely going to make you uncomfortable. but we'll do it in a way that you don't have to like get out coloring implements or anything. So what I'll ask you to do is to step over your comfort zone, that border right now, and just be willing to do this for yourself. So if you can, if you're driving, listening to this, please come back and do it later. But if not, if you can close your eyes, just take a moment and kind of do basically like a mini body scan, going from the top of your head down over your face, your neck, your shoulders, down the front of your body, your chest and belly, the back of your body, your shoulder blades, down your middle and lower back, down your arms, all the way to your wrists and your hands, and searching down over your hips, your thighs, over your knees, your calves and your feet. And as you're just kind of doing this scanning through your body, notice if you feel anything. Notice any sensations that you find in your body, whether they're physical or almost energetic or emotional, places in your body where there seems to be something there. And when you find a spot, just focus on that area, on that sensation in that area of your body, and allow it to take some kind of shape or form. So give it a color, a shape. How big is it? How heavy is it? What's the texture? Is it smooth or quite rough? Just noticing this shape. And then notice if it has any movement to it. You know, is it just sitting still or is it moving at all? And maybe just letting it move. If it hasn't been moving before, giving it a movement. And if it's not presenting itself to you in any way so far, just make it up. If this sensation had a form, what might it look like? If it had a shape, if it had a weight, a size, what might it be? And if it could get any smaller, what would that look like? If it just started to kind of shrink or dissipate, what would that look like? And just allowing it to kind of shift and move. Maybe it gets bigger or smaller. Just allowing it to be there, taking notice of it, making room for it, and knowing that when it's ready to change or shift, it will. And maybe just like coming back out a little bit, coming back to the room, letting that object be where it is for now. And if you feel inclined to make more of this, you can also draw that on a piece
right.
of paper.
Right. So that's so what we end up doing, that first of all, Caroline, that was really beautiful. I went through that just now with you. Like, I was listening and I closed my eyes. It actually really felt a shift. I launched my anxiety course this past weekend. It was a tremendous amount of work and worry, you know, that things could go wrong, and a couple things did, and having to deal with that on the fly. And so I'm left with this residual anxiety, oddly, ironic, not ironic, from launching my own anxiety course. And it's living right below, sort of like right in my solar plexus, like the top of my stomach, underneath my ribs, like in there. And so I was just listening to you and picturing it sort of like blobular, going from orange to green, and it was getting bigger, but it was also able to get smaller. So anyway, I just want to thank you, because I totally gave her, by the way, guys, no warning that I was going to do that to her. And that was just a really beautiful visualization. And so then in the actual retreat, we draw it. So, so what happens, do you think, when people start to draw it?
You know, so the way that we learn about it is a little bit more sort of scientific in a way. And I do talk about it in the retreats, but I try not to go too far because I know it may be too much for some people. But really, you know, it's like our cells, our whole body is in mass of cells, right? And each one of them has a distinct connectivity to the others. You know, we are all like one full being. And so our consciousness and our cells are interconnected. And so when you go and you draw on paper, or you gesture to reenact the movement, or whatever the different, you know, ways are that we bring it to the surface, the cells in your body in that space get to see themselves. It's like looking in a mirror for them in a way they never ever could before. And the same is true for your subconscious mind and your inner child, your inner being. You know, it's like if you're practicing sign language with somebody who can't speak, if you like show that you understand them, it's like, there's just nothing like that.
It's like if you go back to animals, if you go back to primates, it's mirroring.
Yes.
It's showing another being, whether it's you and yourself or you and actually another being, that you are seen, heard, and acknowledged and understood. Wow. I mean, what's more powerful than that?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it is. I mean, and it really is what you're doing. It's like you're learning to translate that language from your subconscious mind. You know, it's also like dream interpretation. When you really understand the messaging that happens in dreams, it's like there's nothing to be more grateful for yourself than to take the time to really understand what's going on those deeper levels, on those subconscious levels. So, you know, the inner child is the most fantastic example too, of just like, if you really reach out and are willing to connect and understand what they're saying, and not always jumping to change it. You know, there, even for me, when I lead that exercise, it's always a challenge for me to not move
right.
into the piece where we get rid of the object, because
right.
I know so many people are the object is painful, you know, or the sensation or the emotion, whichever thing we're working with, it's not comfortable. And we do have this desire to change it or let it go. But before we can do that, we have to see it. We have to feel it. Got to give it some air to breathe.
It's so true. And what you said before is just really resonating with me about the fact that most people who struggle with mind-body conditions are people who are perfectionists, who are goodists, who hold themselves to a super high standard, who have a really vocal inner critic. And people like that, people like me, tend to want to, you know, get her done. Let's look at this. Let me look at that blob of anxiety in my solar plexus and get her out. Come on, moving on. You know, I actually, it's so funny that you say that, because as I was doing the exercise, I felt it kind of getting bigger and getting smaller. And I was so tempted to be like, where's the estuary that leads like this blob of lake? Where can we just like send it into the, like the raging river to get it away from me? I am always looking for that. And the answer is so annoyingly, but so often to stay and to be with and to continue to go into the darkest room and turn on the light and look at the walls and say, I see what's in here. I see you. It's namaste, quite literally.
Yes. Yeah. And the magic of it is that when our focus truly is on that, then it's so much easier to let go after, you know, later or on its own. You know, you don't even notice. All of a sudden you're like, oh God. And then that thing is gone, you know. And that's one of the biggest things I think that happens in those exercises and retreats and when I do this work with people, is that when they truly focus on being present and making the connection and just noticing what's happening, they are so often surprised, so pleasantly surprised at how it relieves itself. You know, you don't have to do the work of kicking it to the curb, because it just wants to be seen. And then so often it is ready to go.
Oh my God. I hope that people listening can hear this with the gravity that I'm feeling it, because I think one of the things that the biggest question I get, because I speak a lot about acceptance and I speak a lot about surrender and I speak a lot about the sentence, however this goes, it's okay for me. And I get a tremendous, I wouldn't call it a backlash, because a backlash would feel that it was angry. Just people sort of desperately saying, I hear you, Nicole. I know this is what I need to do. I can't. I can't say it's no matter how this goes, it's okay for me. I'm in pain. I'm suffering. It matters to me. I want to be well. And then I'm always trying desperately to find words for something that doesn't always have words, which is, you know, and the words I usually find are, the nervous system reads desire to be different than you are as fear. And so if we're constantly desiring to be different than we are, when it reads fear, the only reaction the nervous system can have to fear is protection. And oftentimes that protection comes with more symptoms, because symptoms are the wall that we hit where we don't put ourselves out into the big scary world anymore, which is what's triggering us, which is what's hurting us, which is what's making us unsafe. And so I'm always trying to right that ship. But what I love, Caroline, like with capital L-O-V-E, is you come into this from a different angle. You're coming into this from a literal, physical, somatic experiencing lens of being physically with our bodies, the sensations in them, and not needing to run. And that is a really integral tool in this toolkit for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, even the inner child work, I think, is another really cringy place for a lot of people. Totally. But it's so, you know, the way that I have found so like so much easier to get into it is to just use it as that example. You know, like when I talk about that foster child, I mean, most people would say like, I would never foster a child. That's crazy. So hard. But if you can like utilize an example like that and always be coming back to thinking of how you're working with a little creature, you know, or even a rescue animal, you know, a dog who's been, you know, in a bad situation before or had a hard time, when you open yourself to just being so patient and so loving, you know, that's when shifts happen. And, you know, in the work that I do with people individually, I'm always kind of bringing it back to that, because we have to be willing, you know, if we're willing to do the work, that means willing to just be curious and like, and take the steps to really get to know ourselves. And because it's a trust building exercise all the time, and your body, you know, a lot of people come to me and they say, well, I don't remember anything about my childhood really. And, so how am I supposed to like uncover these things? And I'm like, or they're like, oh, I never cry. I don't know how to access my emotions. Well, the thing is, like, your body and your subconscious mind and your inner child thus far have been told certain things about feelings, right? And about, well, how to present their emotions and deal with them or not. And so when you start journal speaking, or when you start doing this kind of work, it's not going to immediately come to the surface, because your system is still thinking, wait, but if I tell you about that time in second grade when that girl made fun of me, are you just going to tell me to get over it? Because that's what you told me before, and right, that's what everyone else said. So maybe I won't like remind you of that, you know, until you've shown me that you can hear me and feel me and see me for whatever it is that I'm, you know, bringing to the table, and just let it be, you know. And I think that's the other thing that's so helpful for many people, having someone like me in the room, because the subconscious mind is like, okay, I don't necessarily trust my adult self yet, but this person seems to know what they're doing, and like, and they're creating this container of safety so that, you know, we can look at emotions, we can look at sensations and just be present with them. So it's like a warming up all of the time that we're doing with ourselves. We're rebuilding that trust between ourselves and our inner being. And we do have to move outside of our comfort zone all the time in order to do that. That's the whole thing.
It is. No, it really is. And I will say that one of the things I think is the most challenging thing about doing this work is people redefining what it means to be okay. Because I think that we're also tempted to have a certain definition of being okay, which is really a very small parameter that we've created out of fear. Certain sensations are okay, certain conversations are okay, certain relationships are okay. And our relationship with ourself is the number one relationship that we hold tightly to, of what we need to feel or what we need to do for it to be okay. And I think what you and I are saying in this conversation challenges that long-held belief to its core, basically by saying it may require that you sit with yourself in a very different way, but similar to the way it would be with a wounded animal. The transformation does not necessarily take forever, and it can be dramatic. Dramatic. I mean, I think an animal is a great example, way more than fostering a human being, because an animal, as soon as it's done with fight or flight, it goes to rest and repair. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have all this complicated thinking to know, like, well, what you said to me last week, I'm not so sure about that. As soon as it feels safe, it moves. And believe it or not, guys, your animal brain, your brainstem, the primitive brain, sometimes called the reptilian brain, it's the same way. You know, it's not a light switch right away, but when it's a light switch, it is a light switch, which is why I tell people to be the zebra. And I give that example of the, you know, the herd of zebra, and they're drinking at the watering hole, and the lion is introduced. And this is an actual experiment that has been done on live zebra. I do not know how they introduced the lion. I don't know anything about it, except I know it's true, where they introduce the predator and the whole pack herd starts getting signals from each other, and they start behaving. You know, they start, their ears go up and they start moving, and you see their bodies tense. As soon as the lion is removed, the whole herd, it takes the second, they shake it off, they all go back to total rest. And this is what's possible for people when they actually do this kind of work, a lot of stuff that Caroline's talking about, because it's brain science, and it begins to really transform your experience. And I'm sure you've seen that in people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that, you know, it's all about like taking care of yourself, you know, and just like being present, like being connected, being honest and open with where you're at right now. And yeah, there's just, I don't know. There's so much.
Well, let me ask, speaking of, there's so much, so we don't have all that much time left.
Yeah.
Is there any big topic that we haven't hit on that you just want to introduce and we can give it some time?
Yeah. I mean, I feel really called to say the like one number one thing that I usually share with people. And, I always like to ask people, what is it that you do for yourself when your symptoms come up? So, you know, thinking about like the things like that make it better. Right. And so, because all the time I hear people say like, well, if I get a migraine, I've got to go into a dark room, no stimulation, no one can bother me for like at least an hour or whatever, or all night. I don't know. Or some people say like, I've got to take a hot bath, like, or else my pain won't go away, or a hot shower or whatever the thing is. And, you know, in some parts of this work, we're supposed to be like, get back to normal activity and don't always, you know, we're supposed to kind of ignore the pain and do things like that. So I'm not trying to like go against that whole concept, but I also want to introduce the idea that if you were to take those things that always make you feel better and do them sometimes when there's no symptom at all, or before the symptom arrives, that your body and your system, your inner child, all of that would take that as a massive gesture of self-love, that like all it wanted was the hot bath or all right. It wanted was an hour of time to lay down and rest or be quiet and not be stimulated. So if you can find ways to do a little bit of those same things that you do to love and care for yourself, without being forced to do it by symptom, then you also might get some really interesting results just in making those gestures towards yourself of connecting. Because I think ultimately that's what the symptom is doing. You know, even when we go to the doctor, we're going there for love and attention. And
totally.
People think I sound crazy sometimes, yeah, when I say that. But if you think about the way doctors were, I mean, there are many good doctors out there now, but bedside manner has changed. And in the past, like in the movies or the way our parents grew up, more so, or the way we were when we were kids, family doctor was like a god, you know, like you went into the room yeah. And the whole universe disappeared. And the only thing that matters is you. And they have this confidence that like, oh, honey, don't worry. I've got this. I can help you. You're going to be okay. And when we can learn to like sit down with ourselves and be that, you know, have that bedside manner, be that confident, loving attention giver and trust that we're going to be okay, then we've really got it, you know, then we've really nailed it as to what our subconscious system is really seeking in those moments.
I can't tell you how much I love that. And I want to say something else that I think it's really important for people to hear that I need to always say to myself. What you just said about taking care of yourself before the symptoms require you to take care of yourself, that is something similar to the Ruth Bader Ginsburg quote that I love, which is she's talking about taking away the Voting Rights Act, and she's saying it's like throwing away your umbrella in the rain because you're not getting wet. And I think what people don't always understand when they're not suffering is it's so important to do things for yourself without the impetus of pain and suffering. But when we don't have pain and suffering, we dismiss doing good things for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if we as a culture can start moving toward the model of self-care not being selfish, and of it being a priority for us to be able to do that for ourselves, then we don't have to stand in the rain. Because I think what happens is, you know, you stay warm and dry long enough with your umbrella over you and you think, oh, what do I need this thing for? I'm warm and dry, you know? And I think that that's why people become so frustrated when their body is knocking at their door and saying, if you're not going to pay attention to me, I will pay attention to me for you. It's just something that I just can't reiterate enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's so hard. It takes such a shift to do that. It's the same, like, even in the medical model, like preventative medicine, it's like, we're just not taught to do that stuff. And, you know, but it's what really matters. It's what really makes such a big difference when you do the right things first, when you take care of yourself first, and you don't have to, you know, you don't have to be told and shown. It's like I always say, you know, our bodies, they speak first in a whisper. And if you can hear that and you can respond to that, you're in great shape. But if you can't hear it, it will scream, you know, it will kick and fight until you hear it. So there's no avoiding this self-care. Right. You either do it preemptively or you do it in hindsight. It's up to you.
So true. And also I can't let the second amazing point you said slip by, which is we seek medical care because we're actually seeking love and connection. Mm-hmm. And I know that when I've worked with people, a lot of times on Real Time Heals, that is some level of the conclusion they come to, which is, what would happen if my symptoms went away? Who would look at me and care for me? Who would even notice me? And what a beautiful, heartbreaking, but beautiful recognition of what we're really after, which is human connection, love, and care.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and you know, and I think we do have to learn to give that to ourselves first, which is hard, you know, because we want it from other people. But when we learn how to give it to ourselves first, then we know what to ask for. We know what to look for. We know how to know when we're getting it or not, and who to take it from. So
totally. And you know what? Also, we also attract it from other people when we're doing it for ourselves. You know, one of the most unattractive things in the world, as much as I hate to say it, but I know every person listening will agree with this, is someone who's super needy. Right? Like if someone's like always like, pay attention to me, where are you? You know, first of all, it makes the person who's the object of that feel like a failure, because if you are in your mind paying attention to that person, you feel like nothing's ever enough. That's hard. But it also is an irritating, it's a quality that doesn't draw people in. So when you are practicing the self-care and under whatever umbrella it finds you, then you are now going to attract what you really want, which is other care, because people are going to be like, wow, I got a minute to breathe. I'm not constantly being pursued. How can I move toward that person?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And just, the energy of that feels so much better because it's just connective, and it can be more of an even exchange for sure.
Well, Caroline, I want to say to you in front of a million people, well, maybe not quite a million, but we're working on it. Soon. I think you're so fucking smart. I love talking to you. I love you. You've been such a gem in my life. And thank you for coming on my podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love you too.
It's and just I love a big all these
amazing
love fest.
People out there. Yeah.
So just so you guys know, Caroline, if you are wanting to put a face to a name, to a word, she is indeed Journal Speak Integrative Specialist. So when you go on my Facebook group and you're interacting with the community on Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs at Facebook, which is a private community, we actually just hit 8,000 members today. So we are growing a vibrant, very loving, supportive community. When you see an entity called Journal Speak Integrative Specialist comment on your post, that is Caroline and Caroline alone. So there she is. And we will, as we move on, add more specialists. But right now she holds the title and very, very beautifully and strongly so. And And Caroline, if people are interested in your offerings, whether it be individual work or group work or anything that you are, because I know you're bringing forth lots of new things, how can they find you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I am there, and I have started trying to sign my name at the bottom. But yeah, you can definitely find me on Facebook at the aforementioned title or at my own name, Caroline Lee Dewey. You can go to carolinelee.com, and I do individual sessions. I'm still taking people for working on that. I offer a free 20-minute consultation if you want to just like learn more about what that would look like and how it might be of service to you. And yeah, I'm working on putting together a group kind of support program for journal speakers. And I actually, I've just created a form to get some feedback on what people would desire out of that. So I'm going to post that in the group. And so if anyone is interested in learning more about that or helping me to build that in a sense by giving me what you want, you can also reach out to me at CarolineLeeDewey@gmail.com, and I'll send you the form directly.
That's so awesome. Please, guys, if you are struggling, if you need more connection, take advantage of that. And I say that with absolutely no intention other than I know how powerful working with Caroline is. So that's amazing. And also, on May 7th through the 9th, Caroline will be teaching at my retreat, my virtual retreat, which if you're interested, there's a link right from my homepage of my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. And hopefully, all our fingers crossed and God willing, this summer at the Omega Institute together in a room. Mm-hmm. Oh man, wouldn't that be nice?
It would be amazing.
Yeah. So hopefully that will happen as well. All right. Well, Caroline, I love you. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me. And I just, my last little shout out, I just always have to say like, thank you to everyone who is out there doing this work, because there's nothing bigger that you can be doing in your life than making your life about getting to know, connecting with, and healing yourself. That's my belief.
Well said. Words to live by and words to end a podcast by. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us. If you're enjoying this podcast, I would so appreciate if you could hop over to iTunes and rate and review it. It really helps people like you who need it find the podcast. And until next time, this has been Nicole Sachs with The Cure for Chronic Pain. See you then. Bye-bye.